Three passages this morning. Romans chapter 8, 1 Corinthians 15, and Colossians chapter 3. We're heading for Colossians chapter 3. Now see, here's someone who looks exactly like what she is. Anne, would you just stand there for just a moment? See, doesn't Anne look like a nightclub singer? See, sometimes people look exactly like what they are. But sometimes they don't. Romans chapter 8, 1 Corinthians 15, and Colossians chapter 3. We're heading to Colossians chapter 3, but before we get there, we've got to go through two stops along the way. We're not going to spend very long in them, but we have to catch some notions, we have to catch some ideas that Paul writes there in order to understand more clearly what he's saying in the third chapter of Colossians. So in Romans chapter 8, just follow along with me here for just a moment as I begin reading in verse 18. Romans chapter 8 and verse 18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Now stop there for a moment. Don't look any further. Just stop right there. And you can go on and do whatever it is you were doing. Notice, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Notice the term that Paul chose here. He says, the glory that will be revealed. Now, you know what something is that's revealed. When Bernie puts on his American Airlines uniform, all of a sudden my confidence level in seeing him in the cockpit of a 767 has just risen inestimably. But you put him like that on any airplane, I'm getting off and going to Continental. But the moment he puts on his American Airline uniform, he reveals what he is. And all of a sudden, my confidence level rises. It's not that Bernie is not an American Airlines pilot this morning. He is. He just doesn't look very impressive. He just doesn't look like an American Airlines pilot. The same is true of Paul Madeley. See, Paul doesn't look anything like a doctor. You look like an account executive for Dean Witter. He doesn't look anything like a physician, but when he puts on his white coat, put a stethoscope around his neck, and comes in with a hypodermic or with a thermometer, all of a sudden, my confidence level in him rises. You see, what Paul is telling us here is that in the same way in which Bernie is an airlines pilot for American Airlines, and the same way in which Paul Madeley is a competent physician, that when they put on the garments, which are the garments of their trade, what they are is suddenly revealed. It's not that Bernie isn't an American Airlines pilot. He is. The issue is that he hasn't been revealed as one yet. He needs the uniform of an American Airlines pilot to be seen, to be manifested, to be revealed as what he is. The same is true of Dr. Madeley. Dr. Madeley looks like any other man on the street until he puts on the garments of a physician, until he takes up the tools of the trade, and then he is revealed, then he is manifested, then he is seen for what he already is. You see, Paul is saying that the same thing is true of us. In some way, we are the people of glory. Already, we are the people of the resurrection. Already, we are the people of life rather than death. The trouble with living in this world, however, is that none of that is revealed. You and I are everyday people walking along on the streets. We get hit by cars. We get all sorts of illnesses. We come down with all sorts of diseases. We come down with death and destruction. We enter into sins too numerous to count. We fail in our marriages. We fail with our children. We fail with our business associates. We think thoughts that no creature should ever think. We want to do things that no creature should ever want to do. And the last thing we look like is glorious. But Paul is saying that there is glory that will be revealed in us because it's already true of us. It's hidden. It's not seen. It's not manifested. It hasn't been brought out into the light. But nonetheless, it is real. He continues. The creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. See, you all are already the sons and daughters of God. The problem is, none of you look like it. None of us look like we're his kids. Now, if my father, Dwight H. Bingham, were here, you would immediately see that I look like his son. As a matter of fact, when we visited Lafayette, Louisiana, where my dad was raised while I was growing up, you understand, some people were, you know, yay high in Jesus Christ. I was never yay high in anything. I was always like yay high in everything. And when I would walk into Lafayette, Louisiana, everybody knew my grandpa. Everybody knew my dad. They didn't know my name, but when I walked into that town, everybody automatically knew I was a Bingham. There were certain, how shall we say, physical structures that were common of me and my dad and my grandpa. When we would walk into the Petroleum Club in Lafayette, Louisiana, everybody knew who I was because I looked like my dad, and I look like my grandpa. What Paul is saying is you are indeed the sons and daughters of God. We are all the sons and daughters of God, but the problem is right now, none of us look like it. One day we will be revealed to be the sons and daughters of God. One day we will share with him the glory that is his. One day we will be resurrected from the dead and glorified. But right now, we exist in a world, we wait in a world which is overcome not with glory, but, did you catch it? Suffering. We exist in a world in which we have not yet received everything we want. We live in a world in which we wait for what we want. Christmas is coming. As a matter of fact, all the stores know it all too well. Christmas is just around the corner. But you know what? You've still got to wait. Paul is telling us here that glory is yours and glory is mine. We are his sons and his daughters. But we have to wait to be revealed as his sons and his daughters because we are still encrusted with sufferings. Notice verse 20. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. See, right now, you and I are in bondage with the rest of creation to decay. Some of you are experiencing that decay more than others in this class. Some of you are all too conscious of the rate at which you are decaying. Some of you are taking a lot more Advil these days than you used to. Some of you are having to turn away more food than you used to. Some of you are finding that parts which worked 10 years ago are no longer working today. You're all too aware of the rate at which you're decaying. The reality is, from the moment you were conceived, you started to decay. All of us are headed to the grave, and when they bury us, we will decay in that grave. You know why? Because it hasn't yet been revealed what we are. Because the sons and daughters of God are not ultimately headed for decay, they're ultimately headed for glory. It's just not visible in any of us at this point. We get sick, we get irritable, we do perverse and wicked and evil things. And we are still waiting for the day in which we will no longer be subjected to decay and its bondage, but the day in which we will be brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. None of us are yet what we should be because we haven't yet been revealed as what we are. Certain things are true of us. It just hasn't been manifested. It hasn't been made known. A spotlight has not yet been shone upon it. I can remember a few years ago, I had to go to a conference in Oxford, England to deliver a paper. And I asked Pamela if I could leave a few days early in order to fulfill a childhood dream. And my childhood dream was to visit the Normandy beaches in northern France, where the Allies made their landing on June 6, 1944. When I'm not reading theology, I'm either reading spy novels or World War II history, and I wanted to visit the Normandy beaches. And so I got there, flew into Paris. Pamela said, fine and dandy, go ahead. So I flew into Paris. And I knew that I was going to be in the city of Paris for one or two nights alone. And if there's one city in the world in which you do not want to be alone at night, it's Paris. Man, the city of lights, it is the most romantic city in the world. And when you're alone in Paris, you've never felt loneliness like that before in your entire life. So I booked some activities for myself. The first night I was there, I booked myself on a cruise down the River Seine, a dinner cruise down the River Seine, where I would see from the river all of the magisterial buildings in Paris, the Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame. I would get to see everything, and I would also enjoy a wonderful dinner in a very high class ship restaurant. Well, I got on board the ship, and the maitre d' ushered me into the dining room on board the boat that was going to cruise down the river, and I felt like I was walking into one of the most lovely restaurants in the world. This is the way the restaurant on the boat was decorated. Lovely tables, cloaked in sparkling linen, white with the best crystal and the best china and the best silverware, and I could see the moment I walked into the room that everybody in that room had somebody. Except me. And the maitre d' ushered me over to this table, which was set for about six people. Just like this table, had a white tablecloth over it, and there wasn't a soul there, and he sat me down at that table all by myself, and everybody else in the restaurant had somebody except me. So we went on the cruise, and I was able to put up with that for a while, but boy, it was lonely because everybody was talking to somebody, everybody was staring into somebody's eyes, everybody was talking softly to somebody except me. Well, that was bearable until the captain allowed this quartet on the top of the deck to start playing romantic Parisian music. So there I was down in the boat's restaurant at a table all by myself while everybody else had somebody, and now I'm being condemned with romantic Parisian music. After dinner and all the dishes had been cleared away, the romantic Parisian music was playing up on top, and the captain goes to the top deck, and he's got this huge spotlight on a pivot. And after the sun has gone down and the city of Paris is cloaked in darkness, the Parisian music romantically playing up on the top deck, he takes the spotlight and he pivots it over to the left shore of the Seine, and he turns it on, and bam! He lights up this bench upon which are seated two young Parisians who are embracing, expressing their affection for each other. And bam, they're caught in the spotlight. And then he turns that off and he pivots it around to the right shore of the River Seine, and he turns on the spotlight, and bam, he lights up this other bench. And on this other bench are two young Parisians enveloped in each other's arms, expressing their affection for each other. Man, did I feel lonely. You see, that's what God says still needs to happen. Each one of you is a young Parisian couple sitting on a bench somewhere on the left or the right bank of the River Seine. Somebody needs to shine a spotlight on you in order to show us that you're there. Somebody needs to light you up in order to reveal what is true of you, because we can't yet see it this side of resurrection. And what Paul is telling us in Romans chapter 8 is that that day is coming, the day of manifestation, the day of revealing, the day in which what we are will be seen is coming, but it's not yet. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. First Corinthians 15, and read with me, if you will, verse 42. So will it be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that is sown is perishable. It is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. So here's the bad news. The bad news is that right now we are perishable. Right now we are dishonorable. Right now we are weak. And right now we are natural. But the day is coming in which the Lord Jesus will resurrect us from the dead, and he will make us imperishable. He will make us strong. He will give us power. He will deliver us from our natural body given over to decay. But nobody in the world can see that of us now. You know why? Because every time you hit my thumb with a hammer, it balloons up like a balloon. Every time I smell and sniff somebody's germs, I get whatever they had. Every time I walk into a room filled with disease and breathe in, I get that disease. And every year it gets a little bit harder, gets a little bit sorer, gets a little bit slower, because I am in bondage to decay. But the day is coming in which my mortality will become immortal, in which my shamefulness will become glorious, in which my incorruption will become incorruptible. That's what I am. That's what I'm destined for. But none of you can see it yet, because it hasn't been revealed, hasn't been manifested, hasn't been shown. It's true, but you don't get to see it until the day of resurrection. Colossians chapter 3. And so in Colossians chapter 3, Paul is building upon the theology which we have just seen in Romans chapter 8 and in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Read with me from verse 1 of Colossians 3 and following. Since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. You see, all of you have been raised with Christ. All of you have been promised. All of you have been guaranteed resurrection from the dead. All of you have been promised immortality. All of you have been promised incorruption. All of you have been promised glory. All of you have been promised life eternal rather than death. All of you have been promised resurrection rather than decay. So you all have been raised with Christ. That is your destiny. That's what will be true of you. So notice Paul's admonition to you. Since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now, notice, your life is now what? Hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Right now, all of us look like dead people. Some of us feel like dead people. Remember the first 30 minutes after you backed away from that Thanksgiving table? You unbuckled the belt, started looking for the Alka-Seltzer. You felt like a dead person, and you were asking the question you ask yourself every year, why did I do it again? Some of you feel more dead than some of us. But the fact is, this side of resurrection, we are all equally in bondage to decay. The truth is that we have been risen with Christ. The truth is that Christ has given to us the benefits of his resurrection. The truth is that all of us will one day burst forth from the grave, no longer corruptible but incorruptible, no longer shameful but glorious, no longer given over to decay, but now expressing and sharing and manifesting glory. That is true of us. The sad thing about it is you all have to wait for it. It's true, but you have to wait. It's guaranteed, but you have to wait. It's coming, but you have to wait. And while you wait, Paul says, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Because you see, you're not ultimately of this earth, which will be condemned and which will suffer the wrath of God. You are not ultimately the people of decay. You're not ultimately the people of dishonor. You're not ultimately the people of corruptibility. You're not ultimately the people of mortality. You are ultimately the people of glory. And so since you are ultimately the people of glory, then set your minds on the things associated not with this earth, but set your minds on the things associated with glory. Put to death, he tells you in verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust. The first set of sins here are sexually oriented. Put away sexual immorality and lust. And from the teachings of Jesus, we know that that not only involves physical sexual actions, but also the mental ones. thinking them, wanting them, desiring them, seeking after them, lusting for them. Paul says those types of things are not associated with people of glory. That they're not associated with people that have been loosed from decay. Sexual immorality and lust are associated with people who are the people of decay, not the people of glory. So put to death those things. Don't participate in them, because ultimately you will have no part with them. Neither have anything to do with greed, which is, notice, idolatry. You understand that wanting to hoard, that wanting to collect, that wanting to own, rather than being generous, the desire to give and to share, the desire to hoard and to own, the lustfulness to possess, is idolatry. Sure shooting, you're walking into a temple and you're sacrificing something to a pagan god every time we practice greed. Because of these, notice, because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must rid yourselves of all such things: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. You know, Dr. Madeley and I joke all the time. I appreciate his sense of humor, and I rib him, and he will rib me. But you know what? When I walk into Dr. Madeley's office, all of a sudden, I don't want jokes. I want a serious medical opinion. When he puts on his white coat and he walks into his office, all of a sudden things have changed. I change, he changes. We're talking about something very serious. We're talking about the difference perhaps between life and death. And Paul says, just as assuredly, when Dr. Madeley puts on his garments of the physician, things have changed, and the same is true of you. You know that you will be given glory. You know that you will be resurrected. You know that you will be brought back from decay and given life. And so because that is true of you, live now. Live today consistent with what you ultimately are. Live now consistent with what you ultimately are. You are ultimately the sons and daughters of God. We can't see it, but it's ultimately true of you. Live like it. You are ultimately glorious people. We can't see it, but live like it. You're ultimately going to be brought back from decay. We can't see it, but live like it. And if you are not the people of dishonor, but the people of glory, stop lying to each other. If you're the people of glory and no longer the people ultimately of decay, banish sexual immorality and lust from your lives. If you're ultimately the people of life and not the people of death, then get rid of your rage and your malice and your anger towards each other, because they're not consistent with what you ultimately will be. The bad news is you've got to wait. But you shouldn't be bored while you're waiting. You've got more than enough to do. Tell us the truth. You've got more than enough to do. Get rid of your rage and your anger. You've got more than enough to do. Get rid of your sexual immorality and your lustfulness. You've got more than enough to do. get rid of your greed, and be generous to the needs of others. Why? Because you have been risen with Christ, and the day is coming in which what you really are will be made clear. While you're waiting, Paul says, allow us to see some glimpses now. Every time you tell us the truth, we see a glimpse of glory. Every time you banish sexual immorality, we see a glimpse of glory. Every time you're true sexually to your spouse, we see a glimpse of glory. Every time you treat us with kindness and gentleness rather than with anger, we see a glimpse of glory. Every time that you are generous to our needs rather than hoarding your own possessions to yourself, we see a glimpse of glory. Let us have a peek into what you really are. And the way in which we have a peek into what you really are is when you set your minds on things above, rather than things which are here on earth. And so, Father, by the power of the Spirit, we pray that you would make us good waiters. Help us to wait well. As we wait for glory, help us to be concerned and to devote ourselves to those things which are above. Help us to put behind us those things which are of the earth. Help us to live consistently with the glory which will ultimately be ours, but for which we have to wait. By the strength of your Spirit, make us faithful to our spouses sexually. By the power of your Spirit, help us to be gentle and kind. By the power of your Spirit, help us to tell the truth. By the power of your Spirit, help us to be generous. We ask it through the Son and by the Spirit that indwells us and empowers us. Amen.